Bill, but was originally created by Snarf Dude and Moondog for Scottsdale and Productions. Drop by the website anytime online at www.chezepleeze.com. I'm Uncle Skeeter, inviting you back next week as we help to spread the cheese.
CJSF is diverse, independent, and yours. Underrepresented music, local voices, and real people. You keep CJSF independent.
Jane Walker will be telling us about Learn, Develop, Succeed. So what can you tell me about LDS?
Yeah, LDS, Learn, Develop, Succeed, is about a 54-year-old nonprofit society in British Columbia, and we serve learners with diagnosed or undiagnosed learning differences across Canada. And we've been doing so, as I said, for about 54 years. We are growing quite rapidly, which is a little bit different in the nonprofit sector. And we're growing because we know the need is so large. Obviously, we're here in BC, so we predominantly serve learners and families in British Columbia. But we know the need is huge because there are lots and lots of diagnosed and undiagnosed children, youth, and adults that have learning differences and need supports to thrive in school and to gain confidence and to work through lots of different transitions, like into the workforce or getting a new job into the workforce, any kind of post-secondary journeys that our learners go on. So we provide primarily one-to-one support that is individualized for each learner. So we don't use one set curriculum, and we work really hard to pair an instructor with a learner and to meet with them once or twice a week to see them thrive. That's a little bit about us.
So I'm curious, are there any common trends in what the students and your clients need?
Yeah, a lot of students are, if we think about our K through grade 12 students, that would sort of be one group. And then we think about our youth and young adults. Probably one of the common traits is a dwindling sense of self and lack of confidence. And so obviously there's, with across the spectrum of neurodivergence, there's going to be some similar challenges, let's say, with executive function challenge, perhaps literacy with mathematics. Those challenges might, they'll be unique to each learner, although there might be some common pieces we could name in there. But I think overall, if we take one step back from that, I would say one of the greatest common challenges is this sense in the learner that they're not able to do and what the other people around them seem to be doing, and they feel really bad about that. And what the messages that they're getting is that you should be able to do this. And so I think one of the great commonalities and one of the things that fuels our mission and our work is helping our learners shift that perspective and understand that just because their brain works differently doesn't mean they're not capable and not smart and not able to do all the things that those around them are able to do. So shifting that perspective and helping learners gain confidence and shifting that script around around some of the things that perhaps are challenges, that there are ways for them to address and there are ways for them to move through those kinds of challenges. I think that would be something that would be common. It would obviously show up in some different ways, but common from the early years through to the adults that we would serve.
So in your time doing this work, has there been any success moment or story you'd like to share that stands out for you?
Yeah, so one of the great gifts of working directly with learners is there are lots of those kinds of stories. I think a story that does stand out is we work remotely, so we work in person, obviously in some of our learning centers here in the lower mainland of British Columbia. And we also work remotely, and so we do live online sessions across the province and again across Canada. And we had a young learner who started the school year last year, not this year, and had, you know, the strict teacher, I think it was about grade six he was in, and had a very strict teacher, and basically didn't look like he was going to get a lot of the accommodations that he needed. And came home just devastated and got online with his instructor at Learn, Develop, Succeed. And she really spent that time helping give him some tools to cope and actually, again, shifting that perspective that, yeah, you actually can do this. And here's the ways that we're going to support you and help you figure out how to do this. And the mom just got in touch with us and said, "You don't understand what a shift this has made for my son. And he looks forward to these sessions every week, and they're like a lifeline for him. They give him that confidence he needs to show up in school and know that actually, no, I actually can do this, and there is a way through this for me." And when this young man was playing soccer as well on a regular basis, and there would be soccer practices that would start to conflict with his sessions with his instructor, and mom gave him the option, you know, which one do you want to take? It's your choice. And every time it was his sessions that went out, which is really quite a remarkable thing. So the connection, I think, that our instructors make with each learner, and that's part of the magic of the beauty of really carefully selecting how we pair an instructor and student together, that magic can actually just make an incredible difference in the lives of some of these learners. So that's one story that stands out. Thanks for asking that.
So I understand you're always looking for instructors.
That's right. Because we work so hard to pair each instructor with each student, and the demand is so high, we do look for instructors from across Canada. So we do not require I'll say that again, Cameron.
All right.
We do look for instructors across Canada, and we'd encourage anyone who has experience working with learners with learning differences to apply, because we've got great flexibility, and as a BC nonprofit charity, we also offer a living wage rate for all of our instructors.
Right. Thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
No problem.
Thanks.
In this segment of our show, Leslie Van Milligan will be telling us a little bit about Thrive. So tell me a little bit about Thrive.
So my job is as the director of Thrive, which is an agency in the Christian Reformed Church of North America. And that agency comes alongside congregations to encourage and equip them in a variety of areas. Everything from how to create safe spaces for vulnerable people, to justice work, to consultation if churches are going through difficulties. But one of our themes is to support churches with to engage well people who have a variety of challenges with accessibility or disability challenges. And we've been doing that for years. So it's been a kind of a cornerstone ministry in our denomination.
So I'm curious, have you seen any common trends in the accessibility needs that you encounter?
I think part of it is realizing that we tend to compartmentalize caricature who has accessibility needs. And what we're realizing is that if we can go for more of a universal design of our buildings, of our worship services, that actually everybody will benefit from just being aware of the challenges that some of us have. Some of the trends have been, as our aging population, what do we do with people with hearing loss? And that's not a easy to see kind of challenge in our communities. And realizing if we have hearing loops and make sure that we have transcripts for people who have a harder time hearing, that actually a variety of other people are given access to all sorts of the life of the body, if that makes sense.
It does indeed. And when you mention harder to see disabilities, I'm guessing that would also include things like mental health concerns and one's
definitely
ability to engage.
Definitely. So we have one congregation that decided to create a quieter space for folks to be able to participate in worship, but without maybe the level of noise that sometimes worship can have, or more comfortable chairs, or the ability to get up and walk around during a worship, which if you come from a, kind of an older school style of worship, your job is to come and sit down and, right, and be quiet. And they're realizing, well, that doesn't work for all sorts of neurodivergent people. We have people who need to walk around, and they're still participating. But if we kind of find ways to include them where they're at, interestingly enough, it impacts children who probably would like to be walking around and not sitting in a pew swinging their legs. So this universal approach of allowing people to engage at whatever level they're coming benefits all of us and creates accessibility for a wider group of people.
So it's interesting you mentioned that kids would be seeing folks with disabilities sort of in their own space, in so much as maybe they'll grow up with a fundamental understanding or respect that this isn't something to be shied away from. These are people to be loved and accepted and even engaged with.
Yeah, and actually not to be seen as other. So two stories in my own background. One, my mom was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis when I was 8 years old. So most of my growing up, she was in a wheelchair. And I remember it. So I'm 64. So this is back in the day when if somebody was in a wheelchair or had a disability, they were often stared at, or there wasn't a way to get them into the church. Or, we always felt a little bit stigmatized. And that's not what we want in a communal setting. We want everybody to belong and feel like this is their space. So much of the work we do is beyond making sure churches have ramps or elevators or whatever. It's designing a sanctuary where there could be an easy chair for someone who needs to actually recline because of challenges, or that they could transfer from their wheelchair into the easy chair so that they're more comfortable in an hour and a half service. It's thinking beyond kind of the typical ways we've dealt with disability or accessibility over the years. My other story is I'm a pastor, but as part of my I job share with my husband, and I worked in the resource room at our local school for years as a teacher, and just learning how many of my students needed different, you know, having a bag of fidgets that they could bring into worship so that their hands are busy and they're able to concentrate, or crayons, or all of those things. easy fixes to say, you are welcome here, all are welcome here. So I feel like we're trying hard to be more creative and just aware of the different needs. And we have adults that come in with, you know, coloring books now because it helps them to concentrate. 20 years ago, that would have been like, oh, she's not paying attention or she's not engaged.
So in your time doing this work for churches, is there any success moment or story that stands out for you you'd like to share?
Well, I want to be very clear that as the director, we've always had somebody who was particularly gifted and educated in this area. And we're kind of in an in-between space. We're hiring a new person in this role. But I think some of our I'll tell you a great success story that's very much in Canada. There's a congregation in Hamilton that is a church plant, which means it's at its beginning stages. And it is in a supported housing complex. And they use the meeting room for their worship services. Because they're a church plant, there's not as many folks that attend worship regularly. And so what they did is they put up portable walls just to make the container feel a little bit more intimate. But what they found out is that many of the residents in this supported housing situation would love to come to worship, but that they didn't want to really interact with people. And so those walls created safe spaces for people to come, engage at the level that they wanted to, decide to, you know, share themselves at whatever level they wanted to, but they were a part of that congregation. To me, that's a success story.
I'd thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great. Mm-hmm. Handy Link will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
The Writing Support Desk is a free service available to all University of Windsor students from all disciplines and levels of study. The Writing Support Desk helps students hone their own writing and editing skills to empower them to submit their best work possible. It also helps students understand assignment prompts, construct strong arguments, and to properly cite sources. The Writing Support Desk is available online, providing one-on-one consultations on Microsoft Teams. For the most up-to-date information, visit uwindsor.ca/writing support.
Welcome back to HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, Sarah Jane Walker told us a little bit about LDS, and we heard about Thrive from Leslie Van Mullen. Just to avoid any confusion from those of you who might be tuning in, Leslie's Thrive is not to be confused with Jeff Teason's magazine, Thrive. In this segment of our show, Bridget Bernesh will be telling us a little bit about Noah's Clubhouse. So what can you tell me about Noah's Clubhouse?
Noah's Clubhouse, it's a charity that I created in my son's honor, Noah. He's have twin boys, and Noah had cerebral palsy and hearing loss, and he passed away at the age of 7. So I wanted to create something to commemorate him, and also to just there had to be something good that came of this. So that's the reason for the existence of Noah's Clubhouse. And it was very easy to determine what it was that I wanted the purpose of the charity to be, and that was to provide assistance to families with children with cerebral palsy. So the assistance is in the form of funding for therapy for families in Ontario.
So how do you go about reaching out to folks who could benefit from this work?
So that was the first challenge when we created the charity. So there was myself, there were the founding directors, And one of them, Joanne Waltman, is a physiotherapist and is very connected in the community. So that helped, and she owns a clinic. She runs her own clinic. So that helped to get the word out and to make families aware of this charity, and that it was legitimate, because unfortunately there are a lot of kind of bad actors in that area. So it was that helped in gaining like I said, disability in the community. And then it's been word of mouth, and obviously online, through the website, through social media, and then it's just grown, you know. So at first, when it was in, the organization got its charitable status in 2017, and in 2018 was the first year we offered funding. And at first, when we offered funding, families had a window of 2 weeks to apply. And now, and the spots weren't all filled. So, you know, there were more kind of spots for applications than received. And this year, when we opened the funding, the window was, I would have to check back, I think it was 48 hours maybe. And we had to turn away families. Unfortunately, it's just because we're at the point where there are more families applying than there are spots available for funding. So it's been a word of mouth. It's just been steady progress right from 2018.
So, in terms of the funding recipients, what are some of the benefits of having that extra support?
Oh. One of the most, I hear what the families tell me, one of the most gratifying things I've ever done in my career is to send those funding acceptance letters to the families, and they are so grateful. So for some of these families, it allows the opportunity for their child to try a new, an additional therapy, because most kids who have cerebral palsy are in some, they're either doing physical therapy or occupational therapy or both. And then this allows them to maybe try an additional form of therapy. It allows them to do intensive therapies. It allows them to just, and for some families, it allows them to gain access to, private therapy. So it's, the families are just, and a lot of these families, the feedback I get is that it makes a difference. It just makes a difference in the quality of life for their children, in the progress for their children. So it is definitely makes a difference in the lives of their children and in the lives of the families as well.
So in your time doing this work, is there any success moment or story that stands out for you you'd like to share?
Well, like I said, like every year, like it's just a success moment, every year there's been more and more families that the funding increases every year steadily, so that feels good, that we can help more families. Just getting the feedback from the families how this makes a difference. And also when the funding applications are received, and to see that families in different geographical regions in Ontario, so like Southern Ontario or Ottawa region, not necessarily GTA, which is the charity's GTA based, but to see these different pockets is very satisfying, to know that the word is getting out somehow. And I think it just, honestly, it's probably in the last year or so, because the charity STIRD is such a personal thing for me, and I wanted to do this, you know, to keep Noah's memory alive. I it was a very personal thing for me. And to realize that what I've created, in a way, for personal, you know, for selfish reasons, like it was to honor Noah. And it was like a win-win. I honor Noah and then I can help more families. But to know that this charity is making a difference in lives of families is like, that's the success story. Like knowing that if this charity, for whatever reason, ceased to exist, it would leave a hole. It would leave a gap, because there are not, there is a lack of resources for families with children with cerebral palsy. And that's definitely my feel good moment, knowing that this charity is making a difference.
Like, thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great. My friends, when someone starts a charity or an event or even just looks at the world a little differently in honor of someone with a disability, that can be a wonderful thing. It can expand their horizons in many ways. However, it shouldn't have to come at the behest of a tragedy. Sometimes we should just step back and ask those questions. We should just look and say, is our thinking really as rich and as diverse a tapestry as it can be? For the fact of the matter is, everyone in society has the freedom to ask the question, are we truly inclusive? Are we truly doing enough? If you look around and you ask anyone with a disability, chances are you'll find some area that needs work. And any one of us can fill that void. Any one of us can take a step to promote equality. It shouldn't have to come at a loss or just finding out that your child's life is going to be different than what you expected. But the fact is, no matter who's born into this world, no matter what abilities they're gifted with, they all have potential. Potential to live life, potential to change life. And that's something we must never overlook. And really, a lot of times it does take that push of recognizing someone close to us is affected. But, as a global community, is not everyone close to us? Does not every life in this world matter? Not just because we have compassion for their situation, but because they are living, breathing beings with the ability to create to make this world a more beautiful place. The more we recognize that, the more we're going to ask, how can I be a part of change? How can I be someone who stands by others, no matter whether it's disability, gender identity, sexual orientation, no matter what it is? Equality must never stop with those who are simply in our sphere of thought and our sphere of influence. When we cease viewing it as an obligation to those who are close to us, start viewing it as an opportunity for those we could get to know, that's when our thinking changes. That's when we start to expand. You hear the word disability, everybody's mind jumps to certain things. Usually the common household name ones, or ones that we've seen ourselves. But look beyond the surface. You'll find an incredible tapestry. You'll find variants of any given condition. You'll find people who have done what was once classified impossible. You'll find people who are coming up with new and innovative ways to function in society each and every day. I've seen this a lot, especially in disability sport. I mean, it doesn't get the same coverage as its able-bodied equivalent. And I'll always wonder about that in so much as, yes, we can cover the big-name events. What happens afterwards? What do the athletes do to train to get ready for the next one? Are they out there playing every night? We should look at these things. Look at the full array of disability life, not just seeing a piece of the puzzle.
This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you we're all equal. So get on out there and have yourselves a good one. Something tells me you've earned it, folks. We'll see you next week.
You're listening to